Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. It is great to have your company today, wherever you may be. And in the second hour of today's show, I've got a guest who's been on our show a couple of times before, Craig Isherwood, Secretary of the Citizens Electoral Council, a enlightened, libertarian-oriented political party in Australia, which has been around for several decades, actually, which I believe really gets into a lot of important analysis of trends and the underlying forces that are kind of shaping political developments. Of course, with the election coming up, which I believe is going to be quite an interesting one, especially with this WikiLeaks party, as I was mentioning there in the previous hour, with WikiLeaks party running in this incredible storm of controversy over Julian Assange and now Edward Snowden. Of course, new parties like Bob Katter's party emerging. You know, it seems like we've got a bit of change in Australia, a bit of development, a bit of a movement, maybe even the glimmerings of a more true sort of democracy. But then, of course, we have the threat, always, as I was saying earlier, always the threat that could all be rolled back under some sort of draconian changes that could come as a result of some new crisis. And it's always as a result of crisis that we have draconian changes, isn't it? It's always like the totalitarianism always follows on the wake of crisis. It's always this problem, reaction, solution paradigm. Now, my guest, Craig Isherwood, today is joining us to talk about one such scenario which could occur where we're looking at changes to legislation on the big banks that would potentially allow the banks to seize deposits. And of course, that would create such crisis if a failing bank were to seize the deposits of the customers of the bank. It would necessitate practically overnight martial law. I mean, because it would create such social unrest. Craig Isherwood, welcome back to Truth News Radio Australia.
Yeah, thanks, Harold. Good to be back again.
Absolutely, and it's always awesome to have you on board. Now, what do you think of my summary there of the situation with the potential for banks to act in this way in the event that they fail, that they would seize funds that would actually push society into a state of kind of extreme chaos, which would then necessitate or require, unfortunately, the rollback of some of those freedoms?
Well, Harold, for most of your listeners out there, this may be news, and what I would like to do tonight is to detail and lay out for people exactly what's taking place, both domestically and on the global scale. At the end of last week, the European finance ministers met, and they agreed that the process of bail-in will be used in order to deal with any financial institution that gets into trouble, particularly the big G-SIFIs, which is the globally important systemic financial institutions, right? They call them G-SIFIs. There's all these acronyms that the financiers use. But these banks are too big to fail. Now, back in March, your listeners may remember what happened in Cyprus, that there was a proposal put up by the European Troika, which is the IMF, the European Union, and the European Stability Fund, that the funds in one of the Cyprus banks, in fact, all the Cyprus banks, were going to be frozen and a percentage of those deposits were going to be stolen. Now, that's called bail-in, right? It's a mechanism whereby banks' deposits, who are regarded as actually unsecured creditors, when you put your money into the bank, you basically get given an IOU from the bank. So anyone who's got money in the bank is an unsecured creditor. So what the EU finance ministers have said is that they are now going to basically shift the burden for saving any banks from the taxpayer onto the creditors, that is, the depositors. And what you saw in Cyprus is in fact called the Cyprus model, and it's the model for the world. Now, this is what's coming into Australia. Australia is part of what's called the Financial Stability Board. Now, that was founded in 2009, and Kevin Rudd, ironically, who's now coming back, you know, the incarnation of Kevin Rudd in person.
Absolutely, yeah.
He actually founded, or was on the founding meeting in London where they founded the Financial Stability Board. And its task is to create financial stability. In fact, all the watchwords today are financial stability. In other words, you can do anything you like in order to provide to provide for the stability of the financial system. Now, the Financial Stability Board, Australia is a member because Australia is part of the G20, and there's about 20 other countries that, of course, involved in the Financial Stability Board. And what was really shocking was that on the 3rd of June, just last month, there was an article published, the only one we've ever seen in Australia, by John Kehoe from the Australian Financial Review, who said shareholders, creditors must pay if banks fail, Bank of International Settlements. In other words, he was trumpeting the fact that bail-in is, in effect, the policy globally, it's not just for Australia, but globally, that is going to be pushed down people's throats. Now, this caused our organisation, the Citizens Electoral Council, to go into a full-scale mobilisation on this because we recognised the same problem has happened in the United States. It's called the Dodd-Frank Bill, whereby the large banks there can literally steal deposits, transfer those deposits into equity, into shares, and thereby literally rob people of their deposits. Now, you might say, oh, well, you know, okay, well, the people are getting shares, they're getting some value for their money. Well, if you go back into March and you have a look at what happened in Spain, that does have these bail-in laws, the Bankia went broke. Prior to that, they were trying to bail themselves out by selling preference shares to their depositors. Those preference shares were supposed to be worth $1.30. However, today they're worth 1 cent.
Wow.
So everyone's lost their deposits in Spain. This is a bail-in process in action. And consequently, that's what's planned for Australia. Now, we came across a report on the 15th of April from the Financial Stability Board to tell us that legislation was in train for bail-in in Australia. So we have turned this country upside down politically in the last 4 weeks.
Mm.
We have printed pamphlets. The first pamphlet was Kill the BIS APRA Bank Bail-In Plan Before It Kills You, and then Stop the Parliament from secretly legislating to steal deposits, demand Glass-Steagall law instead. And I'll come back to the Glass-Steagall in a minute.
Sure.
Now, we saturated tens of thousands of these flyers into the Reserve Bank, into the APRA, which is Australian Prudential Regulatory Authority, which has the oversight of our banking system, into the Treasury, into parliaments, across train stations, everywhere. And we've caused an absolute uproar in the highest levels of this government, demanding to know where is this legislation that the Financial Stability Board wrote in this report saying was existent. We even talked to members of the Financial Committee of the Senate here in this country saying, where is this legislation? They say, well, we haven't seen this legislation. We don't know what you're talking about, but hang on, this is the Financial Stability Board telling us this legislation exists. So the point is that, Harrowhead, there's a lot of illusions about the Australian banking system, and somewhere we're always told how stable it is, how we're the model for the country, for the world.
Yeah.
You know, our big four banks are quite safe and so forth. Now, back in 2008, we know that one of the members of the Reserve Bank actually told his wife when the global financial crisis was going on to go down to the bank and draw out as much money as you possibly can. I don't know whether the banks are going to be open on Monday morning. That's how close it got, and it was only because of the fact that Wayne Swan put out the government guarantee to allow banks to borrow the government's AAA credit rating that a number of banks, in fact, did not fall over.
Okay. Can we talk about this government guarantee for a moment? Because it says here in the article from the Australian Financial Review that the hierarchy of claims would be respected and any insured depositors must continue to be protected, according to BIS. In Australia, deposits of up to $250,000 are insured by the government. Now, is that the guarantee that you're talking about?
No, there was two guarantees. The first one stopped now, Herowood. The first one was where banks could approach the government to go out overseas and borrow the money, you know, that they needed for a fee in order to roll over their loans.
Right.
And this is not some small thing. I mean, Australia, as at 2012, had $1.4 trillion of gross foreign debt, okay?
Okay.
$340 billion of that was less than 90 days, right? And we estimated that nearly $890 billion of that $1.4 trillion is in our financial corporations. And therefore, you had this huge need to roll this money over very quickly. But when the financial crisis hit, the credit ratings, well, people weren't, the international financial other banks weren't going to lend because they were worried about who they were lending to.
Right.
So the government had to step in and give its AAA, imprimatur onto the banks to allow this funding to continue, this borrowing to continue. That's the first aspect of it. The other aspect was for the sucker retail people like have deposits.
Right.
On the immediately the government came out and said that we're going to guarantee all deposits to depositors up to $1 million. Right, and there was a lot of hoopla about whether it should have been $1 million, and there was a lot of people who disagreed with that figure. That was just ordinary depositors, ordinary people, right?
Okay.
Now, that deposit was cut back to $250,000 as of the 1st of January 2012.
Wow, now, see, I didn't actually know that. So that was cut back to $250,000 only a little over a year ago. Okay, interesting.
Yeah, from $1 million, right?
Yeah, sure.
Now, what you don't know is that on the September the 11th of all dates, 2011,
right.
Before they cut it back to $250,000, Wayne Swan came out and trumpeted that 99% of all Australian deposits are going to be covered by this financial claims scheme, they call it, this government guarantee, so your money's safe. 10 days later, on the 21st of September, the Financial Stability Board came out and said that the financial claim scheme would not cover the four deposits in the four big banks because of the fact is that those banks were too big to fail.
Right.
So it was a furphy. Now, if you've got your money, there's technical reasons for this.
Right.
In that the financial claims scheme isn't just an automatic scheme that happens and a bank fails. There has to be a decision between APRA, the regulator, and Wayne Swan to indeed trigger the financial claims scheme. Because they may not decide to do that.
Right,
so
right.
Craig,
we're just going to break. We'll continue this after the break. You're listening to Truth News Radio. Really important news here, folks. Do stay with us. We'll be right back after these few messages. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. They say everything can be replaced. Welcome back, you're at Truth News Radio. Today my guest is Craig Isherwood of the Citizens Electoral Council, and we are talking about the prospects of a bail-in type scenario being brought into the Australian financial sector, whereby if a large bank should fail, that the actual bank depositors would be required to prop up the bank. Their money would be simply taken. And, of course, the model for this was Cyprus. And there's legislation which has been proposed. There has discussion of it in the Australian Financial Review. Craig, you mentioned there in the previous segment about the government guarantee and then the government insurance policy, which has been reduced from $1 million down to $250,000. But it says here in the AFR article that deposits are insured by the government, that the hierarchy of claims would be respected. So that appears to make it seem like everything's okay, we're protected. If you've got more than $250,000, maybe that's a problem, but that's going to be a very small percentage of the population. So, 99.9% of us are probably fine. What's your take on that?
Well, you have to understand how the financial claims scheme works, Herowood, and this gets into the fine detail that, again, 99.9% of people don't look at.
Right.
And it's part of the cover story that Wayne Swan and the Treasurer wants to use to keep the confidence in the system, because if people lose the confidence, it'll create a run in the banks, which is what they tried to avoid back in 2009 with the global financial crisis, and it worked. Because the thing with banking is massive confidence.
Yes.
See, you have two processes, Herowood. What they call open resolution, where if a bank gets into trouble, then they try and keep the bank open, right?
Yeah.
That means that they'll possibly inject more capital into it, possibly get them to sell more shares. They might sell off portions of the bank, but this will be done under APRA coming in and putting a statutory manager in by law, basically taking the bank over, suspending all the shareholder rights, and trying to keep the thing running. The financial claim scheme does not work, is not applied with an open resolution, because there's an intention to keep the banks going. The
okay.
financial claim scheme only comes into effect when you have a closed resolution, where you intend to literally shut the bank down, break it up, and sell it off.
Right.
Now, that's when the financial claim scheme comes in, and therefore the first $250,000 is guaranteed by the government, but then when the bank is sold off, right, the government gets that money back first, and then fortunately still in Australia at the moment you do have this hierarchy of claims where deposits are protected, whereby after that $250,000 the depositors will get first chop of the cherry. That unless there's another thing they brought in called covered bonds, which is before depositors. This is where you have these bonds sold that have a claim higher than the depositor's own funds. Now, that's only 7% of the actual assets of any bank, so it's not a huge amount.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, Herowood, you take the big four banks, right? Just the Commonwealth Bank alone has deposits of $300. Now, the financial claim scheme...
So was that $300... Sorry, that was
390, 300 and I'll get the so $387 billion
right
in deposits.
Okay,
right now those $387 billion are deposits in the Commonwealth Bank. The financial claim scheme is only funded through an appropriation from the government budget of $20 billion. Now
right.
It can get more. But you're talking about covering, if you look at the paperwork, they say that the financial claim scheme, this so-called guarantee, would cover 99% of deposit accounts in full and 50% of a deposit accounts by value. Now, if you've got in, and this is from the APRA's own figures, $387 billion in deposits, then only $194 billion would be covered by the financial claims scheme. But the problem is the appropriation by the government is only $20 billion. If they had to try and fund this, then they would have to lift the debt ceiling in this country from the $300 billion it is now up to $500 trillion. So you can see politically that's not going to happen. And that's why the Financial Stability Board of the Bank of International Settlements said that the financial claims scheme, i.e. this government deposit guarantee thing, cannot be applied to the big four banks.
And so who was it that actually said that? Sorry, Craig. Who was it that said that it wasn't to be applied to the big four banks?
This is the Financial Stability Board.
They actually formally stated that.
Pushing for bailing.
Really? That's a formal statement that we can verify.
Yes, it's actually in... I have that statement. It's written in their report on... they say, and I'll read it actually word to word for you.
Sure, we'll put it on the show notes as well when I get a chance. But I just wanted to confirm that this is not just anecdotal. This is not just it's not just like a vague perception of what they said. This is actually what they've said, and it's on the record.
Yeah, that's right. And I'll just find this reference here. Because the point I'm making is that there's a lot of illusions about how these schemes are supposed to work.
Sure.
But what's happening behind the scenes is that this bail-in process, whereby depositors' funds are used to bail out the banks, is the model for the world. So we're saying this is still going to happen. This is going to happen as a way of how are we going to deal with the big four banks in our country that are too big to fail, right?
Right, yeah.
So that's the point.
I can see the sort of the logic here is they're saying these banks are too big to fail, therefore they're not going to be wound up, they're not going to be liquidated. We're going to keep them going somehow.
That's right.
But then the somehow is the question, isn't it? How do they keep them going? Well, the Cyprus solution, yeah.
The only way they can do that is through bail-in powers or reducing the debt if it's a debt problem that's caused the problem with the big four banks, which is what happened and what has happened in places where they've proposed this bail-in. Because deposits are unsecured creditors, they're actually creditors, they're IOUs, we owe money, the intention is to steal those deposits so you reduce the debt and you bring the bank back to so-called profitability. But it's the shareholders, it's not the shareholders, it's the depositors that are going to wear the loss. And that's what actually was proposed in Cyprus.
Yeah, sure.
And that's why it's such a hideous proposal.
Now, I can believe what you're saying is true. A lot of people would probably scoff at this and say, no, come on, it's ridiculous. You know, they've said we're insured and we are, and people probably take that at face value because it's certainly been in the news, although the fact that they've scaled it down from 1 million to 250,000 should be a red warning sign for everyone. But you know what? You know, when I put my money in the bank, I never got any kind of certificate that said I was insured. And a question a question in my mind is, If indeed we are insured, as we're told, should we not, as with any insurance policy, be able to get that in written form? In other words, a statement, a guarantee from the government to say, yes, indeed, you are insured and here's your certificate. I'll get your opinion on that after we come back from the break, Craig.
Okay.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back.
Bitter by the evening.
Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. I'm talking to Craig Isherwood about financial collapse and the dirty tricks that potentially can be played on just average people, you and me. People who've got money in the bank. We think we're protected. We're told that our deposits are insured, but then we see other precedents being set around the world, and we see discussions from these ominously sounding institutions like the Financial Stability Board that, you know, certain in certain scenarios, we're actually not protected. Craig, before the break there, I was asking about the question of this insurance. The government said we're insured. Do we have any formal written notification of that? And
all you have is the political guarantees by the leaders, like, for example, Wayne Swan, his press release of the September 11th, 2011, where he basically said 99% of all deposits are guaranteed. There is legislation in place that can guarantee, and this financial claim scheme is in legislation, but again, Herowood, it's all at the discretion of the treasurer. It's not an automatic thing, right?
Yeah.
So therefore, you don't get an automatic guarantee when you put your money in the bank.
Yeah.
The government is saying, we will guarantee your money under certain circumstances, but as I've illustrated, that those certain circumstances, if you've got it in the Big Four, you may not ever have access to the financial claim scheme. That report, by the way, was the Financial Stability Board's own peer review of Australia report,
right,
which was published in April of 2013, just 2011, 21st of September 2011. So it's in black and white. People can read it for themselves. And what they're saying is that the $20 billion appropriation that the government has put aside for this claim scheme is not going to cover the deposits in any of the major four banks. But see, I think you have to take this all from the top down rather than trying to just look at it from my deposits in the bank.
Absolutely,
because
yeah.
We're talking about a global financial crisis that was never solved. And the reason it was never solved is we're talking about enormous amounts of speculative debt in a system that exists purely on speculation. And that means that you're talking about just in derivatives alone, you're looking about $1.4 quadrillion of unpayable speculative debt in the form of derivatives. Now, derivatives are basically financial instruments that are derived from something else.
Right.
And in our own banks in Australia, we have 20 trillion of these things that are off the books, over the counter, they call them. And it got so bad that the Commonwealth Bank has actually hidden the number of derivatives they have. They're what's called the notional capital value of these derivatives. They won't report on that anymore because it's getting to be a bit embarrassing for them, because the numbers are getting so big. When you ring them up and talk to them about it, they say, oh, well, it really hasn't got anything to do with anything, because that's just the notional capital value. But this is what happened with Lehman Brothers, where you see that people ignore the what's called the reverse leverage potential of these financial instruments, and no one knows, and not even the Reserve Bank or APRA have any real handle on just how these derivatives, where they're placed, and how they will function in a adverse global financial situation. So here we have our banks with all these derivatives in them, with a huge amount of external debt, sitting there. All these so-called assurances from the treasurer saying your deposits are guaranteed, but they're not, according to the Financial Stability Board, the people who would know. And elsewhere around the world, you see all these other banks that are in power that are in trouble. And the European Union finance minister saying, we're going to have bail-in, in other words, the ability to steal people's deposits and convert them to shares as a way of dealing with this. So this is the danger that we're talking about. The solution is much, much simpler. If you have a look at the legislation now in the Reserve, in the Banking Act 1959, where all these powers have been existing, it's now 275 pages thick here in Australia. When Ben Chifley back in 1945 introduced the Banking Act, it was 25 pages. And in Section 2 or Division 2 of that Act, it said the responsibility of the Reserve Bank at that time was to protect people's deposits. There was no definitions, no need for clarification. That's what it was supposed to do. Now, that same banking legislation has been changed to being protect deposits and provide for financial stability of the system. Right. So those catchwords that are being used globally to bring bail-in and so forth in to legislation all over the world is now enshrined, in a sense, in Division 2 of our Banking Act. Now, they can't just, the good news, Harrowood, is they can't just, you know, up and bring bail-in in. They have to bring legislation to change the Banking Act, to change Corporations Act, to increase APRA's powers. So that's why we're so hot looking for this legislation, because, and I believe it's been secretly written, I must tell you, I don't okay. believe for 1 minute that this legislation hasn't been written. I think there would be a task force. You can call me a conspirophile if you like, but if I'm talking about what would happen if a bank failed in this country, I think people would be looking very closely at how long their life would be, or whether they're going to be hung by the closest lamppost.
Yeah.
In terms of having people losing all their funds. Right, so I would say this legislation would be written secretly. It would be sitting in the bottom drawer somewhere. It would have been written up by a task force of people that have considered this question of what would happen if a bank failed. And that legislation possibly is ready to ram through the parliament. Just consider what happened in Cyprus, Harrowood. I mean, yeah. Cyprus banks were shut down for a week and people were hysterical.
Yeah.
The politicians were hysterical, right? They rejected it outright the first time round because the banks had been shut down for about a week. The politicians would refuse to go with the bail-in powers the first time round. And then the banks were continually shut down. People got more hysterical. The politicians got more hysterical. Then they ended up accepting legislation that stole money from certain depositors, literally, in order to keep the system in Cyprus going.
And of
they
course,
had no solutions.
And of course, in Cyprus, a lot of depositors did lose their money, but a lot of them were overseas depositors, weren't they? And that was regarded as being, you know, well, it wasn't so bad because it was mostly Russian deposits that were lost, and they tried to spin it so that it looked as if the people who'd lost money were in the mafia or something like that. You know what
yeah.
I mean? And they've certainly played it down significantly.
Yeah. The solution to all of this is actually rather simple, and it's beautifully simple in the sense of it's been done before, and that is you have to go back to what Franklin Roosevelt did in 1933 when the U.S. economy was in a process of disintegration. You had massive unemployment. You know, 6,000 banks had shut their doors. No, not shut their doors. It had actually disappeared.
Right.
And many, in fact, you had all the banks shut their doors just prior to his inauguration because they were literally broke.
Mm.
So what he did was, apart from establishing the Reconstruction Finance Corporation to refinance all the banks by being able to buy preference shares funded by the government, mind you, at that point, what he did was introduce legislation called the Glass-Steagall Act. And what that did was separated out the necessary commercial banking system, but a plain Jane banking system. You know, what banks are supposed to do, take deposits, lend money, create loans. And he broke up these huge conglomerates so that they couldn't be brokerage houses, they couldn't be insurance companies, they couldn't be everything else, you know, mortgage company, financial mortgage companies or whatever. They just had to be, or merchant bankers dealing in derivatives. So that's what we have to go back to. We have to pass legislation to say a bank is a bank, not a speculation house that deals in derivatives, and you have to break them up. And he gave the banks back in 1933 1 year to break themselves up, and he enforced that legislation, consequently was able to bring the US banking system back to health. And it wasn't until 1999 that Bill Clinton put the a piece of legislation through that ended up breaking the last of the
Craig, we're just going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back for one more segment with Craig Isherwood of the CEC. Do stay with us. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. My guest today is Craig Isherwood, Secretary of the Citizens Electoral Council in Australia. And Craig has been going through his research and the work he's doing to alert Australians to the threat of a bail-in-style arrangement being brought in for Australia. It would require legislation, it would require changes to the current laws, but Craig believes that these changes are already in train and they're probably being done in secret. Craig, just getting back to that question of the actual changes to the laws, if they are being written, who is writing them at present and who would be bringing them in? Because, I mean, it looks like we're going to have a change of government. But, of course, my understanding with these types of policies is that it doesn't really matter whether it's left or right. It's going to happen anyway. But how practically can that occur? How can you have lawmakers working on something like this and then we have a change of government? I mean, how would that transpire?
Because the policymakers, when it comes to international banking, are above government. Our government has been run by international financiers for 100 years, Herod, right. And that's been the battle of old Labor against what they used to call the money power. Look, the incoming head of APRA is working with the Bank of International Settlements now. Glenn right. Stevens on the Reserve Bank Board is on the Financial Stability Board Steering Committee. Right. And there's a lot of interaction between the Reserve Bank, APRA, and the Financial Stability Board. In fact, there's a Financial Stability Department in the Reserve Bank, right?
Now, I see.
How would it happen? Well, you have an institution called the Council of Financial Regulators here in Australia. It's a non-statutory grouping made up of members, high-level members of the Treasury, of APRA, of ATSIC, which is the Australian Securities Investment Corporation, and the Reserve Bank, right? These right. people are tasked with preserving the system, right? So they would be concerned about how the system is actually run. So it wouldn't be very difficult for those people in very high-level positions to pull together the resources and the personnel, even in an informal way, to create model legislation, to bring in bail-in laws. They would be able to have access to all the different aspects of law that would need to be changed. They could write this as a model and have it just sitting somewhere so that when it's necessary under periods of great turmoil, you know, just think about the idea of, God forbid, of an Australian bank collapsing, how terrified people would be,
yeah.
just like we saw in Cyprus. And lo and behold, out pops this legislation. It's all written and people are saying, give me a solution. And it's jammed through the parliament.
Right? And it doesn't matter who's in charge at that point. It's the government of the day. It just falls to them, and they've got to do something. They've got a crisis that's developing, and this appears to at least allay the crisis, doesn't it? Because they're saying this is going to preserve stability.
That's the whole point. And this is a conspiracy, yes. There was a conspiracy to bring Hitler to power. The Bank of International Settlements, in fact, is the bank that funded Hitler's capital development of his economy, for goodness sake.
Right.
Roosevelt wanted to get rid of the Bank of International Settlements under the Bretton Woods Agreement. But because Roosevelt died prematurely, the Bank of International Settlements continued on. So we're not dealing with some sort of new creation here. We're dealing with the same fascism
yeah.
that was dealt with that we were dealing with back in the period of Adolf Hitler. It's the same institutions. So when people think about this legislation, we're not talking about a concern about the populations.
Yeah.
We're concerned also about the other policies that I've mentioned on your show of population reduction, of the actual Whiting policy of reducing the world's population from the 7 billion we are now down to 1 billion. How do you do that? Well, you look at Spain, look at Greece, look at Cyprus, look at the shutdown of the health system. Look at their physical economy. It's collapsing. Can that happen here in Australia? Well, look at our dollar. Look where it's gone for the last 2 months, down to 90 cents today. Look at what's happening with the potential of exports to China. And just start to say, well, how does that impact on our economy? What we're starting to see is the unraveling of the Australian economy. So, look, the only solution you have is to come back to it, is the Glass-Steagall proposal. This is not an abstract proposal. 22 U.S. state legislatures have already demanded to put legislation in at the state level, or resolutions demanding that the federal government under Obama or whoever goes with this. You have 67 U.S. Representatives who have signed the resolution 129, which is from Marcy Kaptur and Jones, to restore Glass-Steagall. You have Tom Hakin has put a bill up in the Senate calling for Glass-Steagall as well. And so freaked out is the establishment that just last Tuesday, at a meeting of the Delaware state legislature, J.P. Morgan, right, who also incidentally was responsible, that institution was responsible for some of the assassination attempts on Franklin Roosevelt back in the 30s, ended up going to that state legislature in their own name and saying, you cannot pass this legislation, you cannot agree to this legislation. And at the same time that's going on, the Bank of International Settlements has come out and said, we have to go with global austerity. We have to cut the hyperinflationary money printing that the Federal Reserve has been doing. The Federal Reserve has been printing $80 billion per month, a majority of which has been going into Europe to support the European banks. Once that's cut off, you're going to see a collapse of the system globally. They don't care. They don't care what they do from those sorts of actions. So what we're proposing is go with Glass-Steagall, totally regulated banking system. We need a banking system, but you have it highly regulated, and all the crap and all the speculation and everything else gets pushed to the side and never paid. That debt is just not paid. But you keep the physical part of the economy functioning, and then you issue new credit from the government, from a national bank, which goes into developing the actual physical economy of the nation, building large-scale infrastructure projects, water projects, rail projects. Our Australian economy is crying out for that. We could turn the Ford Motor factories and that have been shut down into factories that could create high-speed magnetic levitation train system proponents. I mean, this is a machine tool sector here that we're on the verge of losing. And if we lose a car industry, well, that takes us back into becoming closer and closer to a third world country. Yep. So this is not some light issue, Harrowood. And I think your program is really the first program I've had to outline this to people. We've got it all in writing. We've got it in detail.
Sure.
So this is a global push. We're not just doing this here in Australia. I mean, as I've illustrated, you see what's taking place inside the United States. And this is freaking out the establishment, because if we get Glass-Steagall tomorrow, it will change the world overnight, because many, many, many countries don't want this bail-in. They don't want to have their banks basically stealing depositors' funds.
Yeah,
alternative to this.
On that note, when you have an institution called, what's it called, the Financial Stability Board?
That's the international board as part of the Bank of International Settlements.
I see. Well, I think the name is very Orwellian, because I think, in fact, what are they going to do with these types of procedures is the opposite of stability. I think you often find there's this kind of twisting of language, because obviously if you were to rob creditors of their funds, stability is not going to ensue. That is, but they're calling that stability, because what they're saying is, well, yes, we're going to preserve the integrity of the bank, but they know it's going to cause social chaos, right? But then again, to me, that is also part of their agenda. That's actually what they want, because this is part of a fascist takeover. I mean, a quick take on that.
Well, look, I've said on your show before, the intention here is global financial control, one world government.
Yeah.
And this has been a policy of the British Empire to have that for a long, long time. Lincoln Roosevelt got in the way of that, right? And today the global financial system is the financial warfare arm of the British Empire. They used to use redcoats and gunboats. Now they use finance. Now they're using the Bank of International Settlements, which was also the organization that helped put Hitler into power and kept funding him. The financiers like George Bush's grandfather, Herbert Bush, helped put Adolf Hitler into power. Same with the financiers in the City of London through the Bank of England. These people funded Hitler to power. Hitler wasn't an accident. He was a project. The only problem for the British was that Hitler was supposed to go east and take on Russia, but instead they went west and took on London. So London's survival became very much in question. So the British had to reach out to Roosevelt to help save the British. But right. Roosevelt said, okay, Winston Churchill, he said to Churchill, after this war's finished, we're not going to have any 19th century methods anymore. We're going to have 20th century methods, which includes, you know, freeing the colonies and developing nations as sovereign nations. We're not going to have your imperial methods anymore. Now, Churchill and the others knew that Roosevelt's health wasn't very good, so they just played a waiting game, knowing that at some point they could unravel the tremendous reforms that Roosevelt did in terms of bringing back the American system of political economy and controlling international finance. And of course, as soon as he did die, Truman took over. Truman was a lackey of the British. The Bank of International Settlements was not disbanded and got rid of. And so consequently, over the last 50 years, you've had a program of this creeping fascism through global financial banking methods. And today we're faced with a very dire situation of getting legislation in this country that can steal people's deposits, for goodness sake.
Craig, we've reached the end of the hour. I'm sorry to have to cut you off. We are at the end of the hour. Thank you so much for coming on today.
You're most welcome, Harold. If any other time, I'm quite happy to come back.
Thanks a lot. That's a wrap from Truth News Radio Australia for the week. We'll be back next week, and I'll see you then.